This is Driven by Data, the podcast.
Welcome back to another season of Driven by Data, the podcast. Powered by Orbition Group and hosted by me, Kyle Winterbottom. We are delighted to bring you season four of Driven by Data, the podcast, and our aim remains exactly the same: to bring you some of the most respected and recognized thought leadership figures from the world of data analytics to share their knowledge, ideas, use cases, and insights across how they've tackled some of the industry's most trending topics and challenges. All that's left to say is sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Driven by Data, the podcast, season four. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Susie Mohan, who is the Chief Data Officer at Currys. So, Susie, thank you very much for joining us.
Morning, Carl. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Good. So, look, where we always start, Susie, is by asking our guests to give themselves, a brief introduction into their background and, journey to date up until this point in time, if you'd be so kind.
Sure. Way back when, my journey into a data career started at Dunnhumby, like a few of us. Fantastic place to start in, really immersed in customer data in particular, working with Tesco and in the UK and in Ireland across all sorts of different activities of, insight and communication. So we were there for a number of years, then moved into FMCG at Diageo and then into consulting in Deloitte, where I was working with retail and consumer goods clients across strategy consulting projects, from things like international market entry strategy to buying and merchandising strategy, so much broader than just data, but obviously rooted in data. And then I spent nearly 10 years at Aimia, the owners of the Nectar program, starting with leading all the analytics that we did for Sainsbury's, through to then my final role was as CEO of the joint venture that we had between Sainsbury's and Nectar of all the retail media network, essentially. And then when we sold that to Sainsbury's, I transitioned over to Sainsbury's. And then from there, I went to Compare the Market as their first chief data officer, looking after all things data, but also strategy and PMO. And then Currys came along and were looking for their first chief data officer. So joined there a couple of years ago now and enjoying it. Lots of different data in a retailer like us.
Yep, absolutely. Well, a fascinating career journey. So lots to unpick there. I guess we've got listeners, and I should stop saying this, Susie, because every time I say it, and then when it goes live like 6 weeks later, it's outdated. But currently, we have listeners in 155 countries around the world, so not everybody might be familiar with Currys as a brand. So just give us a bit of insight into kind of who you are, what you do.
Yeah, sure. So we're the UK's leading tech retailer. We have an omnichannel footprint, so we have 300 stores, and we're one of the UK's busiest websites, particularly in the Christmas period. And we sell everything from washing machines, TVs, phones, kettles, games, and then wider services like recycling of old tech. So check out our Cash for Trash campaign, credit services, and insurance services. We do have also a business in the Nordics called Eltshop, which is very similar and a similar size in terms of revenue. But we're run as kind of two separate businesses. So I'm focused on the UK and Ireland. And an interesting but little known fact is that actually we rebranded as Currys a couple of years ago now, and the name Currys comes from Cherry, who started off selling bicycles in 1884. And I'm an avid cyclist myself, so I always quite like that story of actually where it came from and where we've come to now of electricals retailer in the UK.
Nice, yeah. Are you aware of the transitioning moment of moving away from selling bicycles to selling electronics?
Various twists and turns in the history of it. And then obviously people in the UK will be more familiar with, Dixon's as was, and then Carphone Warehouse and the various different mergers that we had. Back in October 21, we rebranded everything as Currys with the big purple logo. And looking forward from there as one business.
Nice. So you mentioned, obviously, you took the role there a couple of years back, and as the first chief data officer, I guess, what was the purpose of the role, the mandate? You know, what was the reason for them bringing you in at that point in time?
Yeah, I think the role was really created to unlock the strategic opportunity from data. I think there'd been some people doing data for some time and, you know, doing the best they could in the situation. But there were a lot of frustrations with legacy systems, the time it took to get any of the insights out from that. And so weren't leveraging data in the best way possible. So a business case was put forward to start to transform what we do in data. And then my role was appointed, and I joined in September 21. And so set on that journey of bringing together a number of different teams, setting out the vision and the strategy, and getting on our journey for how we improve what the business can do with data.
Yep, 100%. I know that obviously from our conversations in the past, and I guess when you've come to our events and stuff, you're very big on the kind of customer experience and customer first, kind of customer centric approach. I guess just talk us through what key levers were kind of, in your mind that kind of shaped the data strategy that you ended up formulating for the business?
Yeah, I mean, ever since I joined Dunnhumby as a grad, obviously I've been very passionate about how important it is to use data to understand your customers in order to better meet their needs. But in the current context, that was only, one factor of it. There definitely was a desire within our overall strategy to better understand our customers and deliver a better experience for them. So within the overall Currys strategy, we have a number of different pillars. We have easy to shop, capable and committed colleagues, customers for life, and then grow profits. And in the customers for life one was where a lot of the data element was rooted to begin with, but ultimately as a retailer of our size and scale and the kind of data we have, it enables all of those different pillars. And so there's sort of the definition of the strategy came from a number of factors like internal feedback, external benchmarking and experience, and then importantly the use cases that we could drive from data. So really understanding, well, what did the business need from a data team, what was holding us back, and we really wanted to start driving value and decision making around profitability, pricing, customers, lots more that we could do.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. I guess there's a lot of people that listen to this podcast that are probably in the throes of formulating a first data strategy for an organization, or about to embark upon that journey. I guess just very high level, how did you kind of prioritize which areas to start? Because obviously that's always the age old battle, right? Of there's so much you can do, but there's got to be somewhere to start, and there's got to be almost a roadmap of prioritization. So just talk us through your thinking around that, if you would.
Yeah, it's a good question. So it was from talking to lots of different stakeholders and defining that strategy, which is to collect, protect, and use our data to help everyone enjoy amazing technology. And that's how it fits with the overall strategy of helping everyone enjoy amazing technology. And a lot of it was from talking to people. I mean, I think your role as a CDO, or indeed in any new role when you join a business, is make sure you're listening to everyone, to stakeholders, to your team, et cetera, to understand how can what you're doing with data really complement and drive and add to an overall strategy. I believe in a data strategy really syncing with the overall business strategy in order to deliver what the business is expecting and deliver that value, whether that be in absolute value of monetary terms, or in stakeholder feedback, etc. So I guess in guidance to any new CDO or someone in a business tasked with defining the data strategy is listen to your stakeholders, listen to your teams, think through where the biggest value cases are from making a difference. And where are you likely to get the most advocacy and usage in that? So, for example, in ours, as we were standing up the new platform, one of the big use cases was with the finance team around profitability. So that sits in our pillar of grow profits. And we didn't have a good enough sight over the end-to-end profitability of everything that we sell. What difference did it add from a contribution perspective all the way down to a SKU level? Taking into account what it costs to sell it, et cetera. So it was quite a mammoth project, and we've done several iterations of how else we look at basket profitability, for example. But that it was one big area where to get great stakeholder engagement and ownership from the finance team and collaboration to deliver something that would improve things for the wider business as well. So commercial being a big stakeholder in that as well. So we launched that, you know, a while ago, and it's made a big difference to how the business operates. And so that's just one example of finding something that is engaging to your stakeholders and will make a difference, and has that buy-in and backing to get it going and communicating it and the difference it makes to the business.
Yeah, 100%. You touched upon the communication piece there. I mean, I find this topic and maybe slash debate fascinating, right? Because there's a lot of organizations that are doing a lot of great stuff with data, but you often hear the debate around, you know, the perceived lack of value. And I think there's an element there of maybe data analytics teams selling themselves short or not marketing and communicating, you know, what the benefits of their work have been for the organization. Did you have is that part of the strategy for you to, you know, is there an official line of communication, an official kind of comms PR slash plan and strategy?
Official is probably stronger word. I would love the budget to have somebody whose dedicated job is to do it. Sadly, I don't. I work in retail without a low budget. But it's been a multifaceted approach. So there's always, you know, your exco communications that I attend every couple of months to update on various different elements of what me and my team are doing, whether that be in Gen AI or retail media or some of the platform capabilities that we've evolved. The broader communication that we do with our group leadership team, so either at some of the events that we have as a GLT or through, you know, email and Teams comms. We also then have a insights forum where members of my team and indeed some of the customer and marketing team join those sessions to present back case studies of, you know, what they've achieved, often doing it jointly with other parts of the business. So where we've transformed some of the retail reporting, doing a presentation to the wider Currys community on, you know, what the story was, you know, where were we starting from, what did we do and what the outcome is, and demoing things to bring it to life for people. So that's really well attended, and we do that every 6 weeks.
That's interesting. Yeah, very interesting. I guess bringing it back then to the data strategy that you formulated and, you know, this kind of customer-centric approach that was, you know, has deep roots in your background and I guess upbringing through your career. Are they two separate things, or are they intertwined, or how does that work in terms of, you know, having a customer strategy and a data strategy, or is it all one thing? Like, how do you approach that?
Yeah, but for me, it's definitely not one thing. I think your data strategy, as I said earlier, needs to align with the overall business strategy. And so ours, you know, mirrors that in terms of helping everyone enjoy amazing technology. But it's not quite the same as a customer strategy, because you need to be thinking through broader context with customers, whether that be the you know, what their experience is and what they say about it versus what we then see in terms of what customers are actually doing. But for my team, you know, customer is just one thing that they're looking at. They're also, you know, lots of different data sets that we use, like supply chain data, financial data, mobile data. So for me, you know, customer strategy is really important, and a data strategy, both of which need to have some certainly some interaction in it, but your data strategy can't solely be your customer strategy. Otherwise, you're missing opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess the customer strategy, is that owned elsewhere in the business?
Yeah, we have a customer strategy director who, you know, works alongside myself and the marketing team and the retail team, and, you know, much like myself in terms of enabling lots of different teams across the business to ultimately make it better for customers.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. Makes sense. Okay. So you talked earlier about, you know, your data strategy, the tagline, if you will, is, you know, to collect, protect and use data to help everyone enjoy amazing technology, which first of all, I think is pretty cool that there is a tagline, because I think that helps get everyone around the mission, right? And I presume that was intentional. You can tell me in a second, but I guess talk us through then the formation of that tagline, and I guess then the kind of usage part of how you're using data to drive value for the organization and I guess your customers, right?
Yeah, I think the phrase was kind of coined in order to portray the breadth of what data can do for the business and what a CDO team is there for. So I think historically in the past, you've often had either the kind of defensive play within a business of where data is all about data governance and the protection, and that's really important, hence why it's reflected in the vision, or it's been about the tech. That is important, but you can't, you know, tech will only take you so far. So that's kind of the collect element is about the tech of how are we bringing all those different sources of data together. And then the use bit is about, you know, well, how do you make sure the business is getting the value and getting the insights, getting the decisions made from using the data. So yeah, we felt it neatly brought together, you know, the different elements of what you want to be able to do with your data, ultimately to drive value. You know, and we're doing that in lots of different ways at a kind of fairly standard level. We use our data for reporting, you know, help the business day in, day out, understanding performance. Sometimes, you know, very much intraday performance when it comes to kind of peak trading period of wanting to know hour by hour, how's it going, et cetera, Black Friday, you know, that kind of thing. But, you know, beyond that, we build models for our credit and services team to understand and activate loyalty and retention. We've delivered, you know, the series of data products that I talked about earlier with our, you know, finance team to drive, you know, a whole new level of insight into profitability. And we've done lots with our commercial team on pricing as well. So never a quiet day at Currys. There's always more ways in which we could be using data. And then that's one of the challenges in itself of prioritizing and working with the business to understand what their most important needs are and then aligning resources in a kind of business partner type model or product owner model to make sure that we're always investing the time in the activities that will make the biggest difference.
We know that a huge challenge for data leaders right now is achieving budget access and C-suite sponsorship. But why is that, might you ask? Well, in our experience, it's because they generally don't understand what data should be delivering or know what good looks like inside or outside the organization. If this is on your radar today, visit www.dl-academy.com, where you can sign up for a free data literacy consultation, and we'll help you arrange an eye-opening, trust-building executive workshop which will help you unlock those key doors for 2024.
Yeah, I know you talked to us through earlier about the kind of prioritization piece for the data strategy, but I guess as it relates to those three buckets or segments, if you want to call them that, around collect, protect, and use, just keen to get your thoughts on kind of how you fleshed out that roadmap. And the reason for the question, I guess, as some adding context, is what I see day in, day out, and I'm sure Susie, you've probably seen me ranting on LinkedIn many times about this, right, is you often get a lot of the collect and sometimes the protect, but then the usage part, for whatever reason, it's almost like it's not thought about ahead of time. It's almost like, well, let's just get the tech in place to collect and then we can figure it out as we go, and then inevitably that doesn't normally happen. And then, you know, you get the CEO, CFO, key stakeholders saying, oh, this has been a huge waste of time and money and it doesn't work. And, you know, then they can the whole thing, right? Which I find fascinating. So I'd love just to get your thoughts on how you kind of picked through that to make sure that you're covering those three bases as it relates to your, you know, phrase, I guess.
Yeah, I think the use bit, you have to think about that at the start because that governs also what data you're putting into your platform. Part when the program was started off, it, you know, the business case was built on different elements, but did include a cost reduction element of, you know, of the technology piece. So how to, you know, remove legacy platforms, but it did also include, well, what were some of the initial use cases that would drive it. And without that, I think you really then, as you say, struggle to get business engagement on it. And, you know, data platform projects do take quite a while and they are quite complex and they are not that exciting to CEOs. They want to understand, well, what's the outcome you're driving from it, not, you know, how many teradata have you got of different forms of data in there. It's, you know, that's not that interesting to them. What's interesting is the difference you can make from making better decisions or from genuine, you know, products that add value from the data. So that was always part of our mindset of shaping out a number of different use cases across different areas in order to get that advocacy and the proof points. And, you know, a data platform journey is never over because there's always more data that the business is creating and needs to both collect together, but also protect and then use it. So I would say, you know, wholeheartedly agree with you that if you haven't thought about what your use cases are up front, then it is more likely to be a struggle to engage people and prove the value.
Yeah, 100% makes perfect sense. I saw a post that probably a couple of months back now, right, which I think triggered me to message you and say, right, I need to finally pin you down to get you on the podcast because you're very difficult to get hold of, Susie. But it was about your connected media initiative. Yep. that Currys have recently launched, which from the outside looking in, you know, really fascinated me and looked very interesting. And I've seen a few kind of announcements around partnerships that have come out of that more recently. So I guess just talk us through that in its kind of entirety. You know, what is it? Where did it come from? Why are you doing it? What benefits are you trying to drive from, you know, getting involved in that?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, it's a new source of value that I've introduced to Curry following my previous experience. So, you know, as leading the Sainsbury's retail media business you know, several years back. When I joined Currys, I kind of it was an area that I thought I would explore, and obviously Currys were clearly interested in that element of my background. And so I took a bit of time to understand what we did already, and we did already do forms of retail media, particularly kind of in the trading space, but it hadn't ever really been looked at holistically as a proposition, and there were definitely gaps in our offering versus my experience of how things had operated at Sainsbury's and indeed, you know, the kind of Tesco Dunnhumby world. So, you know, I set out what the opportunity was, and you know, particularly thinking through, well, how can any of the brands that we work with, how can they better understand who the Currys customer is? How can they reach those customers? How can they, you know, convert customers? And so set out what the opportunity could be, and, you know, work through with a number of different partners, as you mentioned, that we've talked about on LinkedIn. And we've launched several new products, and the overall proposition is Currys Connected Media, so that it's connected in terms of how you as a brand, you know, Sony or Samsung might be able to understand who your customers are across the different categories that you might operate in, how your customers are buying within Currys, and then what that insight then means for how you can reach them, both on our site and off site as well, and coming up hopefully in stores soon as well. And then, you know, the kind of closed loop of how you would then understand, you know, how that's performing overall. So it's early days, but it's great progress so far. Some good feedback internally and in the marketplace about it. But yeah, exciting, innovative space for us.
Yep, nice. So I guess it's a partnership there built on effectively trying to help the people that are the businesses that sell through Currys to reach customers, you know, offer better service, better products, et cetera, et cetera. And that's obviously benefits both them and you, right?
Yeah, and benefits the customers from a more relevant engagement. So, you know, if a customer's already bought a TV last week, well, we don't want to market them another TV because they're unlikely to buy another one. But actually, who are the customers that we can see through our data that they're browsing but they haven't purchased yet? Where might we be able to, you know, target them both on our site and off-site, what type of customer are they, what's the best messaging for them, et cetera. So it's, from a customer perspective, hopefully much more relevant and appropriate timing, et cetera. But yeah, a better opportunity for brands to connect with Currys customers that are in the marketplace.
Yeah, interesting. I guess we've talked then there about obviously the ways that you're using that, and that example is really kind of interesting. Just talk us through the collect and protect buckets then in terms of what that meant and what that journey has been like for you over the last couple of years, I guess, to set the foundations, for want of a better phrase, right? To kind of allow you to go and use the data to kind of drive value.
Yeah, exactly. So within collect, it was all about bringing the different data sets together into a single cloud platform. So we went through a process that was actually pre my time, but what selected Microsoft Azure. And so then we've, since I joined, been building that up in order to have a more joined up view of the different data, and frankly, a more modern approach to data, so that with the Azure stack and we use Databricks, it means that our whole data science community have got you know, much better access and usability of the data, plus the removing costs from and risks from legacy systems. And that, you know, that journey will continue to evolve. There's more data that we would like to ingest into the platform. So, for example, HR data. We have a big workforce in the stores. How do we better understand how that works across different regions, different hours that colleagues work, etc. And that is an important one to dovetail into Protect, because you can't just put colleague data anywhere. It's got to be very protected and the right access only for certain use cases and individuals, etc. So naturally Protect is a really important pillar and concern for all CDOs, ensuring that we've got the right tech, the right policies, but really importantly the right practices to protect our data.
I think it's a fascinating landscape at the moment, right? Because we live in a world where the expectations of the customer are so high in terms of what they want from personalization and relevance perspective and how they engage with a brand. Yet equally, their expectations are also really high on, we don't want you to use our data in a certain way. And people are a lot more, I guess, clued up to that than they probably were even 5-10 years ago, right? How do you balance the need for, that kind of hyper personalization and making sure that you're getting the protection piece right? Because I guess there's probably a balancing act there somewhere, I imagine.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's an ongoing balance for all of us in the data world, and indeed the marketing and online world. Customer expectations, as you say, are higher than ever. And we know it as ourselves, as consumers and customers. It's frustrating when you have an experience on a site where, the customer journey doesn't use your data relevantly. Equally, you do get concerned of data being tracked all over the place. So, it's important not to cross the creepy line, as you might call it, and that keep a bit of common sense approach to it. And obviously data security is really important. So we have all of our standard practices internally in terms of our we have something called DSAB, our Data Security Assurance Board, where any new use of data has to come through that and fill in the relevant processes of data privacy impact assessment, etc. So all well ingrained processes to make sure that any new use cases wanting to use data have gone through that approach and been fully assessed by our DPO privacy team and our InfoSec teams, and that that we're putting ourselves in our customer's shoes as well. That think that what's the right thing to do with data. Just because you can doesn't always mean you should. That's a balance with things like retail media and monetization of ensuring that it's well protected and that you're doing the right thing and it ultimately is a benefit to the customers through relevant experience. And then I think with things like hyper personalization, it very much depends on the context. For a retailer like us, it's a slow moving consumer goods. People don't buy washing machines every day. They will have a number of different tech needs over the course of a year, but it's not the same as grocery day in, day out. And so it's what's both the risk reward element and the cost benefit analysis of how personalized you need to be. Obviously, you need to be really relevant, but there's a fine line to how far you really need to take it.
No, that makes perfect sense. I guess, have you noticed a difference over the years, in terms of how businesses are having to approach the kind of personalization piece and the targeting piece around, across different generations, right? Because we live in a world now where, you've got people that are of one, let's say age as an example, right, who are still shopping online, but you've also then got, the youngsters of today who are doing the same thing, but their expectations are also wildly different. Like, how do you cater for all those different types of audiences?
I think COVID for us was a big sort of telling point. I mean, again, it was pre my time, but obviously stores all had to shut, and then we had a massive shift to everything selling online. And then post all of that, we've settled at roughly a sort of 50-50 split between stores and online, and you see that appeals to all ages of particularly with a purchase like ours in certain categories, people want to still go and look at the product, get some expert advice from our store colleagues, and to interact with it, but still spend a bit of time browsing, because it's quite a considered purchase for a lot of it, and that's true of many ages. And I think it's it's remiss of us just to think that it's all about the youngsters on their phones and, you know, old people don't actually. I think the stat is something like 80% of over 65s have a smartphone. And so, you know, whilst they might not be on viewing our TikTok campaigns that we do, because that is, you know, targeted at a younger audience, they still expect good service. They still want to understand how to use the products. And so we need to make sure, as a brand like ours, where we are a kind of broad church, as it were, to you know, a mainstream retailer, that we've got the understanding of all our different customer segments and that we are able to refine what our products, propositions, services for those different consumer groups.
Yeah, absolutely. Makes perfect sense. Well, look, it'd be remiss of me, Susie, to kind of finish today without talking about generative AI, right? Because obviously it's been all the rage for a good 12 plus months now. I guess what role do you see Gen AI playing across the kind of retail customer landscape, and I guess how that relates to their experiences and their expectations of organizations and I guess the service and products that they provide, like holistically, what do you think Gen AI can and will do for the sector?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a hot topic in our space, and I've led three proof of concepts in our business already, more focused on internal use cases from a sort of protection factor of just to make sure we're learning about it ourselves and can refine it in a more closed context. But the areas that I could see it evolving, there's quite a few around more in the kind of marketing and personalization space. Lots of different opportunities out there. We're even seeing, Gen AI enabled products. So, for a retailer like us, I think there was a recent Samsung launch where it's got AI features in the phone, with keyboard that has got different AI tools built into it, language translation, advanced grammar, etc. Probably because lots of us who text can't do good grammar anymore with that. And ongoing challenge with that. But I think for us, we see it as definitely an opportunity, and it's something we're working on at the moment now in terms of the customer journey and where can AI play in the sort of pre-sales, during sales, and post-sales, as well as that product space that I talked about.
How do you manage when these hype cycles come along? And I'm not suggesting that kind of Gen AI is a hype cycle, because this feels bigger with more potential than some of the things that might have come before it, right? Like data mesh or the big data revolution or all of that type of stuff. But I guess, how do you, as a CDO, how do you manage that when there's so much noise in the industry? I can only imagine conversations that are happening in the boardroom and at Exco level, like, we need to move, we need to go, because if someone beats us to the punch, we might be in trouble. How do you manage getting that right? Kind of doing enough, but not too much too quickly.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's exactly what we've been talking about recently, of a real desire from our Exco to be able to go faster on it, but yet not to make any mistakes with it, in terms of, we wouldn't want to put something out with customers that could lead us into hot water, in terms of hallucinations or any of the inappropriate stuff you may have seen out in social media on it. And so it's we are taking a considered approach to what should the broader strategy be, what should any overlay to our existing strategy, because we're a business that's already gone through our 3-year planning process. We're assessing where Gen AI can optimize or advance elements of that, rather than setting up a completely separate stream for it, and also trying to engage the wider business with it. So we've set up an AI steering group, which I chair with one of my team, leading day to day on it, to make sure that we're keeping the business involved and engaged and understood, understanding where we're at on the journey, and that as they're getting, no doubt, like I do, different partners and vendors approaching us about, different capabilities that are out there, that we're having a joined up dialogue about that, and that, particularly from a risk and protection angle, that those use cases have to come through the right sign-off procedures. So it's a tricky balance to not want to slow the business down, but to make sure it's done in the right way, because Gen AI is definitely here to stay, and we want to make the most of that opportunity, but not to go so fast that we fall over. And it's fine to make some mistakes, but putting some in customers' hands when it's not fully worked through is not ideal.
Yeah, 100%. I guess bringing us back to kind of close the loop then, I guess just curious on the connected media piece, I guess within the setup of your team and structure and op model, if we kind of want to refer to that, does the connected media piece, you know, is it embedded into that or does it need to operate as its own thing? I'm just thinking out loud, you know, if there's other data leaders within the kind of retail space that might be thinking about, you know, is there an avenue here for us to do this kind of partnership type model, what it actually takes to get it set up and working for you, you know, amongst obviously the internal work that you're doing for the business?
Yeah, so the retail media piece that we've set up, so Currys Connected Media reports into me, but I have someone in the team who has experience of running it before, or at least running elements of it before. And obviously data is an enabler to it. So it helps with being in one team because then as he's trying to stand up new products and propositions, he can work with other parts of my team and indeed other parts of tech to make it happen. I think every business is different. In you know, other retailers, it sits with marketing. In others, it sits with commercial. And I think it depends on the context of your business and where, you know, where it's come from and how new it is or how well established certain retail media products might be. But it's definitely a way in which to raise the awareness of the opportunity for data to deliver value for the business and for you know, supplier brands that you work with. And ultimately, you know, to try and improve the experience for customers too.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Susie, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure having you on. And yeah, look forward to seeing how the rest of your journey unfolds and hopefully see you soon.
Great. Thank you very much. It's great to be here and see you soon.
That's it for this episode of Driven by Data, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week speaking with another thought leader from the world of data and analytics. Until then, please follow our Bishan Group on social media if you've not already done so, where you'll be able to subscribe and therefore be made aware of the podcasts as they arrive. And please share, like, and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these two. If you've got any questions or you want to suggest ideas for topics or potential guests, then please feel free to reach out to me. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.